two pass stack.
Yiko!
Different level. I don't know the rules anymore or something's changed, but I can't believe it.
It's a 4-0 goal. Big cheer. Are you kidding me? What is that?
It's NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Crew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things NHL. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
For Myers. Winds up, doesn't shoot. Far side for Little. Down low for Army. Out in front of shot. They score! Matthew Perreault did all the work down low. A slick passing play, and Winnipeg has regained the lead. It's 2-1 for the Jets.
From Monday night's Jets victory over the Vancouver Canucks, that was the game-winning goal, 2-1. That goal by Matthew Perreault made it. The Jets go on to a 5-1 victory on home ice against the Vancouver Canucks on Monday night, snapping their 3-game losing streak and moving to 10-0-1 in their past 11 games at Bell MTS Place. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those listening live this evening via the iHeartRadio app, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Sean Assor. We're with you tonight until 8 p.m. We got 2 hours of Winnipeg Jets and NHL discussion for you on this Wednesday evening. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us via text message in studio. Send your text to 129090. I might even read them on air if I like them. And of course, our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news, is illegalcurve.com. As a good Wednesday evening to you. How are you doing, young man?
Yeah, doing pretty well, guys. Happy second night of Hanukkah.
Yes, definitely.
So if you're of the Jewish faith, hopefully you're having a nice second night of Hanukkah. We made some latkes last night at our house. We had Naomi's mom, Shelley, over. It's always my favorite time of the year, Hanukkah, Christmas. It doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah, it's a nice time of the year, being, you know, sort of regardless if you're religious or not religious. You know, the holiday season is a time to spend with your loved ones, of course. And from my perspective, the beauty of Hanukkah is you are encouraged, and part of Hanukkah is to eat oily, greasy foods.
Yeah.
So that's something I'm all in, all on board with there, Shawnee.
A holiday based on deep-fried carbohydrates. I mean,
yeah,
you really can't ask for much more.
No, that's
now,
pretty.
Are you guys applesauce guys? Or
sour cream? I'm a sour
cream
guy.
Both, hot sauce?
You know what, Sean?
Hot sauce,
I like,
is too new age for me when it comes to my latkes.
Hot sauce on latkes?
Oh, yeah.
I can see it. I mean, I get the concept, but I'm a sour
cream. That's not cool.
I'm a sour cream guy when it comes to my latkes.
I like a little applesauce once in a while.
Yeah, I like it too.
Doesn't do anything for me.
But I'm not down with hot sauce.
No. One thing I'm surprised never caught on, given that, you know, potatoes and french fries and ketchup make sense, why ketchup never really worked with the latke?
I've dipped.
You've dipped?
A time or two. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Like when you've been desperate and you just decided to live on the edge?
No, I have the sour cream, and then I mix the hot sauce and the ketchup together and make like a spicy ketchup. That's just me, though.
You're a foodie.
I live dangerously.
You're a foodie is what that boils down to.
Or I'm obsessed with dipping sauces.
Yeah, but either way.
I mean, I guess you could dip it into whatever you want, but as far as I'm concerned, I mean, it's either sour cream or applesauce. I think some people like to dip it in some other things, like you mentioned, ketchup or hot sauce. But
yeah, you're a traditionalist.
Yeah, and I mean, there's also some people, I think, that don't dip it in anything, right? But I think you got to dip it into something. I mean, you got to dip, Drew. You got to dip.
You got to dip. The Jets dipped into the win column on Monday night against the Vancouver Canucks, as we mentioned. That 5-1 victory over the Canucks sort of gets the Jets, after what had been a bit of a rough road trip, the two losses in the two games that they should have won, most people would say they should have won, that, of course, being the games in Detroit and then in Sunrise against the Florida Panthers. They come back on that Saturday, and sure, they don't get the win in Tampa, but I thought that was a reasonable effort, a good effort. You get the 1 point against the best team in the league, and you could see the team starting to feel better about themselves after that game. And then after I would describe as at best first period for the Jets on Monday night, they really pour it on and you know, cruise to a 5-1 victory over the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, you know, back to your point about the game against the Lightning, Drew, I thought the Jets stood in there toe-to-toe with the Tampa Bay Lightning. They showed that they weren't intimidated by their speed or their skill. I mean, that game could have gone either way. Obviously, you know, Braden Point scores early in overtime there, and, you know, Tampa Bay definitely looked like the better team in the extra frame. And, you know, that's been a problem, Sean, for the Jets this year. You know, they haven't won a game so far in overtime, and, you know, you would expect them to maybe have a better record considering all of the skill they have with players like Laine, Scheifele, Ehlers, Wheeler, and so on. But the game on Monday night against Vancouver, guys, I thought the Jets were lucky to get out of that period tied. And, you know, they get the quick goal. Dmitry Kulikov sneaks one past Markstrom there. But, you know, Brock Besser scores shortly after and ties it up for Vancouver. And the Jets only mustered, I think it was three or four shots in that first period, Drew. So yeah, the first period was not good for the Jets, but they were clearly the better team in the second and third period. And, you know, Matthew Perreault's winning goal, it wasn't a power play goal, but the goal happened right as the penalty to Sam Gagner expired.
For all intents and purposes, right, it was just
right. So again, it was that power play that bailed them out, and we've seen that time and time again, guys, especially at home, where the Jets have scored a couple of quick power play goals in the second period, and then the team just can't come back. The opposing team just can't come back. And this Vancouver Canucks team, guys, without Bo Horvat, without Sven Berchi, they weren't a very good team, even with those players in the lineup, in my opinion. I realize they had a good first, you know, 10 or 15 games of the season.
They've overachieved so far this season.
I would say they've overachieved. Yeah. So, you know, for the most part, the Jets played two solid periods, and that's all they needed. Connor Hellebuck was very solid, didn't need to steal the game, but especially in the first period when the Jets didn't have it, he kept them in there. So overall, it was a very nice bounce back from a very disappointing road trip.
Yeah, I was going to say, and kind of a big win just to set up moving forward for the Jets. You know, a tough road trip. They come back. They lose to Vancouver. Who knows where they are mentally at that point, but they come back. They score early, which I felt was important because they're scoring at a torrid pace at home. So to get that goal early, kind of start feeling good about themselves, loosen the hands up on the sticks a bit. Just going back to that Tampa game, can we talk about how impressive Mikhail Sergachev is?
Yeah, he's a hell of a player. I mean, as much as it cost them Jonathan Drouin to acquire him, I think I still think that's a trade for that's good for both sides. But boy, does Sergachev look like a special defenseman on the blue line for the Lightning.
I saw a really funny stat during the game, following the game, where it was like Mikhail Sergachev reaches his 20th point as a Hab or as a Lightning. No one on Montreal yet to reach 20 points.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Tampa Bay looks like there's a reason why they have the best record in the league. It's because they are the best team in the league. I think I can say that. I don't think anybody's going to quibble with that, at least in this room right now. And that's what makes the Jets getting that 1 point, especially when you're playing that third period with only four defensemen as Byfuglien leaves the game. Chiarot is pretty much sat down as a coach's decision. The Jets to do what they did, and truthfully, if it's not for the two huge saves made against Nikolaj Ehlers, the Jets all of a sudden have a two-goal lead in that third period, mm-hmm, and might end up stealing the victory in regulation. As it happens, you know, Ehlers gets robbed two straight times, and the game ends up the way it ends up.
And I think, guys, the pace of play that we saw on Saturday night between the Jets and Lightning is what we're going to see tomorrow night versus Chicago and on the weekend against St. Louis. You know, Chicago's a very fast team, mm-hmm, and you know, Tampa Bay, I think, is right up there with the Jets and a few other teams as being the fastest in the league. And, you know, Sean makes a really good point. I mean, this Lightning team has no shortage of skill. And then you add a Mikhail Sergachev, who right now has more points than Victor Hedman, who, you know, you expected to be in the Norris conversation. And Mikhail Sergachev, if he isn't in the Calder Trophy conversation, he should be. But they definitely carried that play over into the game against Vancouver in spurts. I didn't really like the first period, as I mentioned, but for the most part, the Jets dictated the pace of play, and you know, Vancouver didn't have much of a pushback in that game. And you know, you got some late goals there in the third period. Matt Perreault gets his second goal of the game, tipping Matt Hendricks, a terrible giveaway from Jacob Markstrom. But for the most part, guys, the Jets, that's a team that you should beat. And we saw that earlier in the year when the Jets beat the Canucks, but it was a little bit too close for comfort, if you remember. You know, the Canucks made it interesting late. This game, after that second period when they went up 3-1, this game was over. So as I mentioned, it was a really nice response from a road trip in which you came back with only 1 point in three games.
Let me ask you guys this. As I mentioned off the start, the Jets are now 10-0-1 in their last 11 on home ice.
Which That's incredible.
Is incredible. Absolutely incredible.
7 wins in a row.
Yeah. And not 7 wins, I mean, where they're scoring at least basically 5 goals a game, it seems. I mean, they scored another game with five goals after the game against Ottawa with five goals, and the game against the Vegas Golden Knights.
Seven.
I mean, they had the game against Pittsburgh where they had seven. I mean, it's every game they're scoring, you know, getting the game against Minnesota where they had seven. They're scoring huge amounts of goals at home. Why such success on home ice? This is a team that the last few years, admittedly, the team hadn't been playing well overall, but that the quote-unquote home ice advantage wasn't overwhelming at what was then the MTS Center. So why this year are they succeeding so significantly on home ice at Bell MTS Place?
Well, if one of us has the answer to that, you better go tell Paul Maurice and the Jets coaching staff.
Bottle it and take it on the road.
Right, because, I mean, they haven't been good on the road. And, you know, you got two tough games coming up on the road, Drew, against St. Louis and Nashville, the next four games against Central Division opponents. I know we're going to talk about it the next segment, and then we've got Mark Lazarus coming up at 6:30. But when you're talking about, you know, the way this team has been playing at home, and as you mentioned, not only well at home, but they're dominant at home. And all these games where they're scoring five or seven goals and really blowing teams out of the water in either the first period or the second period against Pittsburgh, I mean, I don't think anybody expected the Jets to beat the defending Stanley Cup champions 7-1. And when you're talking about, you know, why the difference in play, I think the Jets developed a confidence at home early on. And, you know, I think that Pittsburgh game back in November, or was that October? I guess early November. I think that what they've done is they've carried that through, and it's hard to explain the disparity in play. I mean, I think if you're going to come up with reasons, I think that you're grasping at straws, because I think at times we've seen the Jets play on the road well, and I think at times we've seen them well, and I haven't played very well. So, you know, it's really tough to explain.
I think, just personally, a couple things come to mind when I'm trying to figure out, you know, the crazy goal differentials between the road and home. I think one of them is the depth that this team has now, and it not only does it provide scoring on multiple lines, but it also alleviates pressure off of your top two lines. And when things aren't going well, mistakes are compounded, especially at home when the pressure is on and the fans can be on you. And Winnipeg's got some raucous fans, but they can also be a little bit bitter at some points. And I just feel that when you get scoring from all four lines, that pressure to score just kind of gets lifted off the top line shoulders a bit. They can play a bit more freely and just kind of play more naturally, not force the issue, just not, you know, they don't feel obligated to score as often as not. And I think another big factor is that the Jets have come out and scored early often at home.
Mm-hmm. Best first period
exactly,
team in the league.
Exactly. So they're putting the pressure on their opponents while giving themselves a little bit more room and a little bit more margin for error. You know, obviously mistakes are never welcome.
Right.
But that kind of peace of mind almost is there more nights than not when you come out with an early lead.
The Jets have the first of four straight Central Division matchups tomorrow night against the Chicago Blackhawks. When we come back, we preview that game. We discuss the perennial, typically, Central Division leading Blackhawks. Not this year. They're not in the playoffs as we speak. We talk about the Blackhawks next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Wednesday evening, you're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Kevin Bozeman is in town at Rumors. He starts his two-week run yesterday. Great reviews, funny guy. You can check him out, rumorscomedyclub.com. If you're looking for maybe a Christmas gift, a stocking stuffer, a Hanukkah gift, Rumors gift cards, they're available. So, you know, check it out. Contact the club, rumorscomedyclub.com. Get yourself a gift card to give to your loved one.
Are we going to have Kevin Bozeman on the show Saturday?
I don't know. You want to?
Well, we had him on before.
Did we?
He was live in studio.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Where was I?
I'm pretty sure you were here.
I have no recollection of the events in question.
Yeah, Kevin Bozeman was on the show, I want to say 6 to 8 months ago.
Are you sure you're talking about the right person?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I have
a picture on my Instagram of me and Kevin Bozeman.
Okay, I've completely blocked that out of my memory, but I will look into it and see if we can get back together with Kevin.
You know, going back to last segment, Drew.
Yeah, I have no recollection of that.
That game against Pittsburgh, in which the Jets won 7-1, was back in October, October 29th. So it's hard to believe that that game was that long ago.
Whoa,
but
that's the streak the Jets have been on.
Well, to me, that's really when the Jets' dominant play started at home. And I realize that game is not part of the seven-game winning streak here. But to me, beating the defending Stanley Cup champions, that was really the game, you know, that showed that the Jets can really beat anybody.
Yeah, that they shouldn't. That they are, you know, one of the... Well, if not the I guess an upper echelon team. That's where they've been playing so far this year. So that's what you have to consider them. They play tomorrow night against the Chicago Blackhawks, a Blackhawks team that everybody's been talking about, and you were sort of making this point off air earlier. Everyone's sort of been talking about the Blackhawks and how they're not the same Blackhawks that we've seen for the last number of years, and maybe that the Blackhawks are on a bit of a downturn. And while all that might be true, if the Blackhawks were to come into Winnipeg tomorrow and defeat the Jets, lo and behold, they're only 4 points behind the Jets.
Right.
So, you know, to write off the Chicago Blackhawks as yesterday's news, I think it would be certainly a mistake by anybody to do so. And I don't think the Jets are treating them as a diminished asset. I think they're treating them as a strong rival in an ultra competitive Central Division.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Drew. And I don't think there's any question, guys, that the Chicago Blackhawks are not as good as they were a couple of years back when they were winning their third Stanley Cup in 6 years, right? And you look at some of the players that they've lost over the years, and there are substantial pieces that they've lost due to the salary cap. But the core of this team is still there. Johnny Taves, Patrick Kane, Corey Crawford, Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Brandon Saad and Patrick Sharp back. They won a Stanley Cup with the Chicago Blackhawks the last time they won. So I think the question is that core still as good as it was? And for me, I mean, Johnny Taves, Patrick Kane, I mean, these are still dominant forwards. I think a guy like Brent Seabrook has regressed, and I love Brent Seabrook, but I don't think he's a top pairing defenseman anymore. I think you could argue that even on a good team, he's a third pairing defenseman. Duncan Keith is still a top 20 defenseman, maybe even top 10 defenseman in the league. To me, it's really who they've brought in and supplemented that veteran core. So you're talking about Alex DeBrincat of the Erie Otters.
Second on the team in points with 23, second on the team in goals with 12.
Right, and he was a steal in the second round. I thought the Jets might take him in the first round a couple years back. And you're talking about guys like Ryan Hartman, Vinny Hinostroza, Nick Schmaltz. I mean, these guys are now in their second year in the NHL, and they've had varying degrees of success. That back end, to me, is where it starts, though, because Corey Crawford, guys, has been the MVP of the Chicago Blackhawks team this year. His numbers have been fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's the backup goalie situation that's been a problem. But for me, it's, you know, the question marks that you have with that back end. And, you know, Jan Ruta is a guy that has stepped in there on the back end for the Hawks. He's not going to play tomorrow night against the Chicago Blackhawks. So against the Winnipeg Jets. We'll ask Mark Lazarus about him. But this team still has lots of depth, guys. This team could still score goals. I mean, DeBrincat's a guy that's been a really nice surprise in his rookie year. But, you know, Patty Kane is having another great year. You know, he picked up the overtime winner the other night in their last game against Florida. But to me, it's that back end that can be really exposed by teams, because after Duncan Keith, after Brent Seabrook, after Connor Murphy, you know, it's a pretty thin blue line.
You're right, it's a thin blue line, and that goes to show you just how good Corey Crawford has been playing this year, in that the Blackhawks, despite what most people would say are defensive struggles, are eighth in the NHL in goals against. Corey Crawford, second in the NHL, tied second in the NHL in save percentage with a .933 save percentage, tied third in goals against average with a 2.20 goals against average. They've had to rely on Corey Crawford to be one of the best goaltenders in the league, top three goaltender in the league, because if Corey Crawford, Ezzy, and Sean, if he'd only been, let's say, average this year,
trouble.
Real trouble for this Blackhawks team. He has been that good, and they have, and you know, Corey Crawford, for whatever reason, isn't thought of as one of those core pieces, doesn't get the same regard as one of
those. He's absolutely a core piece.
I know, but the names that come off your tongue immediately when you think Blackhawks and you think Stanley Cup success is Keith, Taves, Kane, Seabrook, and then Corey Crawford.
It shouldn't be that way.
It shouldn't be that way.
But you're right, it is.
You're right. It shouldn't be that way because Corey Crawford has been the only reason why they are tied for the second wildcard spot in the NHL's Western Conference right now, Sean.
And surprisingly enough, I was doing just looking through before the show here, and they are not getting special teams help. They have the third worst power play in the league running at... Where's that number there? I believe it's 15.01%. So you'd think with all the skill, they'd be able to pop some power play goals. But yeah, just not being able to, really struggling with the man advantage. And again, showing the importance of Corey Crawford.
And the penalty kill hasn't been good either, Sean. So, I mean, special teams overall have been a problem for the Blackhawks. And it's that old adage, you know, you got to have three scoring lines in the NHL these days. Pittsburgh has shown that the last couple of years, winning back-to-back cups with three solid scoring lines. And, you know, right now, you know, they expected more offense out of Patrick Sharp. They expected more offense out of Ryan Hartman. I think Ryan Hartman's only got four goals on the year last time I checked. So right now, that top line is really driving the bus. Jonathan Toews, Brandon Saad, and Alex DeBrincat. Alex DeBrincat didn't start the season on the first line, but he's basically forced his way onto that first line.
Well, you talk about Patrick Sharp, though. I mean, they were hoping to catch lightning in a bottle. I mean, Patrick Sharp has had a couple down years in a row with the Dallas Stars, and they thought maybe bringing him back to where he had his most success as an NHL player. But Patrick Sharp is no spring chicken. He's played a lot of hockey, and it's really showing with what he is as a player nowadays. He's a guy who's certainly a veteran towards the end of his career. I mean, he's 35 years old already, and this is a guy who, you know, is playing in a top nine role for the Blackhawks, and it's, I would suggest, iffy at best if he should be in that role, but it's a function of the salary cap troubles that the Blackhawks have that they can't really improve upon that right now.
Yeah. Right, and Patrick Sharp, Sean, I was just going to quickly jump in here. I mean, Sharp is a guy that's not on a long-term contract, right? So you know that he's towards the end of his career, and he's a guy that's particularly valuable in the playoffs, right? But you're right, Drew. I mean, he's a guy that you could argue, you know, at this point in his career is kind of that 13th forward, a fourth-line guy, you know, can't really play, you know, top 9 minutes. But really, it's the youngster, similar to Minnesota a few years back. I mean, you're waiting for guys like Nick Schmaltz and Ryan Hartman to break out. Schmaltz, I like a little bit better than Hartman. I think he has a higher offensive upside, you know, both first-round picks. But right now, I mean, it's really Patty Kane, Jonathan Toews, Alex DeBrincat, and Brandon Saad. And after that, you know, there's a pretty significant drop-off.
Well, Artem Anisimov, I mean, he is what he is, and that's a guy who's, you know, he's got some good goal-scoring ability. But, you know, he's not going to be what I would call a key cog in your lineup. He's got 13 goals, but he's only got 4 assists. So he can put the puck in the net, but he's... probably not fair to call him a passenger, but he's probably more of a passenger than he is a driver of a line at this stage in his career.
Yeah, it's fair to say they tell Artem Anisimov to win the faceoff, get the puck to Patrick Kane, go to the net.
And
you're a big body, yeah. Go to the net and
put your stick on the ice and let it hit you.
Let 88 just do his thing and just get him the puck.
Well, you know, they've had, and they made the big offseason move in terms of their back end, acquiring Connor Murphy from the Arizona Coyotes in exchange for Nicklas Chalmerson, and that's a move that hasn't really panned out very well so far. You know, Connor Murphy with 5 points. Now, Chalmerson wasn't an offensive defenseman by any stretch, but the comfort level that Joel Quenneville had with Nicklas Chalmerson, I think it was a lot more than certainly what he had with Connor Murphy to start. And we'll ask Mark Lazarus if that relationship is improving, because we know that Quenneville was upset when that trade happened back in the offseason.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody's going to say that Connor Murphy is a better defenseman than Nicklas Chalmerson. I'm certainly not going to. I don't know if the drop-off is as much as some people think, but really it's once you get down to that fifth and sixth slot. And I mean, I know the Hawks really like Gustav Forsling, and he can skate well, and I know that Jordan Osterle is a guy that you wouldn't expect to be maybe at the NHL level, but because the Hawks have injuries, you know, he's been in the lineup for the Hawks. I think he's played 6 games now, but the Hawks are still in it, guys. I mean, they're tied with the Dallas Stars and the Minnesota Wild right now with 35 points. And
you know, the Calgary Flames, too, for the record.
Sure, and I was just looking at the division. Yeah. But when you consider that, you know, this game really is that 4-point game where if Chicago wins, You know, they're only 4 points behind the Jets. The Jets have been off to this great start, but Chicago's still hanging in there. As you mentioned, they're in the second wild card spot. They've won 3 games in a row, but unfortunately, that consistency just hasn't been there.
Yeah, the Jets did have this great success against the Blackhawks last season, winning 4 out of 5 contests. So, and the Jets, you know, for the last number of years, they were always sort of the measuring stick was how are you performing? How do you compare against the Chicago Blackhawks? This is a great opportunity for the Winnipeg Jets tomorrow night to, I mean, if the Jets end up with an 8-point lead on the Blackhawks, I mean, 8 points in this day and age in the NHL is a significant number.
And I think one of the reasons, guys, why the Jets have matched up so well against Chicago is Chicago's a fast, skilled team. They're not a very physical team. They don't take a lot of penalties. And, you know, the Jets obviously take a lot of penalties, but they're a fast, skilled team. And You're right, they have been the measuring stick for this team, but we've seen that the Jets have, you know, gotten up for these types of games. They've played well against the Pittsburghs, the Columbuses, the Tampa Bays, but certainly right now, I mean, I think it's safe to say Chicago needs these points more than the Jets do.
Absolutely. It'll be a hell of a matchup tomorrow night at Bell MTS Place when the Jets and the Blackhawks do battle. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Mark Lazarus of the Chicago Sun-Times. He's in town to cover the game. He joins us for more on the Blackhawks' perspective. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. This segment of the program is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Still a mouthful. I don't know why I ever wrote that as a promo for myself. Anyways, we're trying to get a hold of Mark Lazarus of the Chicago Sun-Times to talk about the Chicago Blackhawks, the Jets' opponent tomorrow night. As you mentioned off-air that in that segment previous, can't believe we didn't mention the absence of Marian Hossa from the Blackhawks lineup.
Yeah, and you know, it's been the whole season now that we haven't seen Marian Hossa in the lineup for Chicago, so, and he's not going to come back. He's on long-term injured reserve right now, but you think back to those teams that were winning the Stanley Cup and 2013 and 2015, and Marian Hossa was an absolutely huge part of that.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Chicago Sun-Times, he's the beat writer for the Chicago Blackhawks. He's a good friend of the program. Mark Lazarus joins us. Mark, good evening, and welcome back to Winnipeg.
Thanks. It's the same lousy weather we have in Chicago.
That's something that we're consistent, usually, the weather between Winnipeg and Chicago, so it's just like at home, right?
I have a balcony in my hotel room. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with that.
You know, Mark, before we get into talking about the Blackhawks, I got to say, you had a great tweet, I think it was over the weekend, where you acknowledged that there's only one way to abbreviate Winnipeg, and it's WPG.
Absolutely.
And all those other people who do it WIN, they don't know what they're talking about.
And the handful of people that use airport codes, that just confuses everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm supposed to know that YYZ is like Calgary's airport code or something.
I think YYZ is Toronto. YYC is Calgary.
There you go. Okay, even see? And I know the YOW is Ottawa, but I mean, I think that's more Yow for what's happening in Ottawa, but that's a separate issue altogether. Mark, obviously we brought you on to talk about the Blackhawks, not airport codes, believe it or not. And as we sit here, you know, December 13th, it's the first meeting between these two Central Division rivals. And it seems that, you know, the question for you I have, Mark, is, are the Blackhawks closer to being an upper echelon Central Division team, or are they closer to being the tweener playoff team that they currently are?
I think they are what their record says. They're a tweener team right now. I mean, there is still a high ceiling for this team. Any team that's got the amount of talent that's on this roster is going to have a high ceiling. And when you have Corey Crawford in net, you know, one of the two or three best goalies in the world, you can have a lot of success. But they have played like a borderline .500 team borderline playoff team for most of the year. They've been kind of underwhelming. Like it's hard to describe. You see them on a night like they're on a three-game winning streak right now, but they didn't look terribly impressive in any of those three games at home against bad teams. They just seem to be scuffling a bit right now, and you know the Hawks are often kind of coasting through stretches of the regular season, but it's different this year because, you know, you look at the standings, they can't afford that. They're not way out in front like they usually are. So you're waiting to see some kind of urgency in their game, and I think if they find that, they have the talent that's going to carry them through. It's just a matter of finding that urgency and carrying it through a full 82-game season.
Mark, how much does this team miss Marian Hossa right now, and is there any further update to whether or not we're going to see Hossa back playing for the Chicago Blackhawks again?
You're never going to see Marian Hossa play again. I mean, that's not definite, but you don't sit out an entire season at age 39 and then come back. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think the gunk or whatever you want to call his allergy is going to go away anytime soon. He's had a phenomenal career. He's one of the greatest guys ever, and you know he deserves to ride off into the sunset. But they certainly miss him right now. You know, it's funny. We spent the last two seasons talking about how Jonathan Toews needs a left wing. Jonathan Toews needs a left wing. So the Blackhawks go out and get Brandon Saad, but they lost his right wing now. Without Hossa on the right, they haven't been able to find a guy there because Richard Panik has had a really bad season. He's gone 21 straight games without a goal. He's going to be a healthy scratch probably for the second straight game here. And you know, so now Alex DeBrincat is up there, and that's so far looking really good, but he's 19 years old. You can't necessarily expect him to be the best player in the world just yet. So there's some hope there with DeBrincat in, but the Hossa did so many things so well. He was great on the power play. He was great on the penalty kill. He was great 5-on-5. I mean, he's one of the most underappreciated players, I think, in modern NHL history. He did everything at a spectacularly high level and was a really important presence in that room. So you don't getting Brandon Saad back was big because we always called him Mini Hossa, plays that same kind of game, so strong, so good at his own end. But you don't just replace Marian Hossa. It's going to be a process.
Mark, we were just talking, teeing up the game for tomorrow before we brought you on, and we were just talking about special teams and how the Blackhawks, pretty surprisingly, are pretty bottom of the barrel when it comes to their power play, running 15.2%. I believe it's third worst in the NHL. I'm just curious, from your perspective, you watch this team a lot more than a lot of us do. What's ailing them with the man advantage right now?
I know that's one of those things that looks surprising, but it's not, because it's always like this. Mm-hmm. I think in 2015-16, the Hawks had a really good power play. Artemi Panarin's first year here, and they had a lights-out power play. And in 2009-2010, they had a great power play. Every other year, it's been pretty awful. It's one of the most maddening things about watching the Hawks. You see, they'll put out Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, Marian Hossa, Brandon Saad, all these phenomenal players, Duncan Keith, and they can't score on the power play. A lot of it is they get too cute. When you have that much high-end talent, they don't just throw the puck on net and look for ugly goals. They're always trying to make the fancy backdoor pass and make a highlight reel play. But, I mean, that excuse is worn thin after, you know, a decade of it. It's an indescribable thing, and it drives Blackhawks fans absolutely batty that you have all this talent out there, and year after year after year, the power play is middling at best. And this season, it's been atrocious some nights, and for significant stretches. They had a good stretch where they had 8 goals in 6 games a few weeks back, and then it went right back in the tank. And it's been frustrating for players, it's been frustrating for Joel Quenneville, and it's been just infuriating fans for a while now.
Mark Lazarus is our guest on NHL This Week. Mark covers the Chicago Blackhawks for the Chicago Sun-Times. Mark, if Corey Crawford has only been, he's been excellent this year, but in a hypothetical, if he's only been average, how much further down in the standings is this Blackhawks team?
Oh, they're almost in Edmonton territory. I mean, it would be a disaster. The same thing's been the case for the last couple of seasons, too. I mean, people always talk about Crawford, and they kind of dismiss him as a Chris Osgood type who's the beneficiary of a great team in front of him. But the last few years, it's been the opposite. The Hawks have been a beneficiary of having him bailing them out on a regular basis. They'll be the first to tell you that. Players will tell you he's the most important person on this team. He's the best player on this team. Even with Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews and all these great players in the room, Corey Crawford is the backbone of everything. Without him, you know, the whole house of cards falls down. I mean, you have to have that kind of goaltending on a regular basis, especially when you're working new pieces in on defense. They have 4 of their 6 defensemen are new this year. Tomorrow night, they're going to have their down Cody France and Anyan Ruda also, so they're even farther down their depth chart defensively. A lot of the pressure falls on Corey Crawford's shoulders, and time and again, really since about the 2012 season, he's been up to the challenge. He just gets better and better every year.
Mark, you mentioned Alex DeBrincat earlier, and he's as you mentioned, on the top line right now with Jonathan Toews and Brandon Saad. And your colleague Mark Potash mentioned this in his article earlier today. He's now got 16 points in his last 15 games, and he hasn't gone more than two games without at least a point since October 27th, which is really incredible for a guy that, you know, we weren't sure if he was going to make the Hawks full-time back in early October. Should he maybe be more in the Calder Trophy conversation right now?
I think if he keeps this up, he'll force his way in. I mean, he didn't start out like this. He didn't have the start that a Clayton Keller kind of guy or Brock Boeser had in Vancouver. But he's catching up very quickly, and he's now that he's going to be in a top six role for the foreseeable future on a line with Brandon Saad and Jonathan Toews, he's going to have more and more opportunities. He's on the power play now. That just started a couple of weeks ago. He's the real deal. I mean, you're right. I mean, in September, I remember I saw him in the Traverse City rookie tournament. He was the best player on the ice, but that's against, you know, a bunch of prospects. And even he seemed resigned to starting the season in the AHL. But from day one of training camp, he blew everybody away. He is absolutely – it's amazing because he's not that fast. And, you know, he's not like a dangler out there. He doesn't make these highlight moves, but he's just always in the right spot. He has incredible anticipation. He knows where the pass is going to be. He knows where the rebound is going to come. He's got a really quick release. He's just a really savvy hockey player for a 19-year-old. And he's, you know, you got to think he's only going to get better from here. I mean, he's not going to score 65 goals a season like he did in the OHL, but he's certainly better than any of us expected him to be this quickly.
Mark, I was just looking at your Twitter account. You tweeted out something yesterday that I found pretty interesting. It says, I spent a couple minutes chatting with Patrick Kane yesterday about importance and strategies of 3-on-3 overtime. Here in Winnipeg, it's almost confounding that the Jets have had pretty much zero success with 3-on-3 overtime this year. They just can't seem to squeak out a victory with regards to 3-on-3. I'm curious how that conversation went. Was it interesting? You know, one of the most skilled, dynamic players in the league talking about a little more extra time on the ice. I mean, what was that conversation like? Anything catch your ear?
Well, yeah, I mean, I was asking about it because you look at the standings and how bunched up they are, and, you know, Winnipeg is a little comfortably ahead right now. It's kind of a role reversal for these two teams. But, I mean, these overtime points are going to decide playoff spots, like in every single one of them. I mean, there's, like, the Metropolitan Division and the Central Division in particular. Overtime points are going to be everything. And Patrick Kane said basically the same thing I think, which is it's a complete crapshoot. It's totally random. There's no, you know, you could try to have all the strategy and skill you want, and you try to make sure you don't have, you know, any turnovers, but all it takes is one big save and the puck bounces a weird way and Olsen's a 2-on-1 the other way and the game's over. Last night, the Hawks won in overtime. About 5 seconds before Patrick Kane scored on a breakaway, the Panthers had three shots that should have gone in. One hit the crossbar, two were Crawford great saves, and all of a sudden a weird bounce and Patrick Kane wins the game. It's completely random. I'm torn personally on 3-on-3. Kane loves it and I love to watch it. But I think it's a terrible way to decide a hockey game because you're going to decide playoff spots this way. It's less evil than the shootout, but it's still not hockey. It's too random, and there's not enough strategy and structure to it.
You know what, Mark? Along that point, the first year it was introduced, we had Chris King on the program with the, you know, NHL head office, and we said to Chris, why is the tiebreaker still regulation and overtime wins when overtime is not reminiscent of anything that you see during, you know, 60 minutes of the regular time? And he said that's something that they should explore and they should change, and then they've never gone back to doing it. So I agree with you that, as much as 3-on-3 overtime is exciting, the fact that it's really such a determining factor when it comes to playoff tiebreakers is bizarre.
Yeah, what we need is to go to the international system with the 3-point wins for regulation wins and incentivize teams to actually try in the third period. Every game between the West and the East in particular, when it's an out-of-conference game, mm-hmm. and it's a tie game with 11 minutes to go in the third period, people stop trying. Like, all right, let's just get our point, and then we'll worry about getting the bonus point later. It makes for bad hockey.
Agreed.
You know, Mark, earlier you mentioned that the Hawks are a little bit banged up on the back end. Jan Ruta and Cody Franson aren't going to play tomorrow night against the Jets. I don't think it's long-term unless there's something else to add to that. But at what point does Stan Bowman maybe look to acquire a defenseman?
You know, they have a little bit of money to spend for the first time in years because of Marian Hossa being on LTIR. They have a couple of million in cap space. But who's available in December right now when the standings are bunched up like this? I mean, who isn't looking for a top-four defenseman? I don't know how easy it's going to be to acquire one. It's been better lately. The defense is, it's really, before these injuries, had really settled down a bit. Connor Murphy, who struggled early on, moved to the left side for the first time in his career and really kind of started taking off. Brent Seabrook is with him. They're kind of getting third-pairing minutes, and it's working out nicely. Ruta and Gustav Forsling, second-year player. Forsling's been terrific this year in his second season. Vancouver fans will not be happy to hear that because that trade didn't go so well for them. but that's become kind of a shutdown pairing. And, you know, Franzen looked pretty decent alongside Duncan Keith. You got Jordan Oesterle. They have some people. They just don't have, you know, the dynamic defense they used to have. They used to have a top four or five that was just unrivaled in the league. I'm not sure there's a guy out there that can fill that void that's available right now. So I'm not sure, you know, Stan Bowman, if an opportunity presented itself, would make that move. But I think they almost need depth scoring more than they need a defenseman at this point.
Mark, along those same lines, is Stan Bowman looking to do anything to upgrade the backup goalie position? We mentioned how good Crawford's been. Forsberg has not been that great in his 10 games. J.F. Berube is also on the roster, but he's struggled in his one showing with the Blackhawks this year. Any thoughts about maybe upgrading on the backup goaltending position?
I don't think so. I think they're still pretty high on Forsberg. He's had a lot of hard luck losses this year. The Hawks have not been good to him. They score one or two goals almost every time he's out there. I think he told me, he's like, yeah, the one game I won was one of the worst games I had this year. It's been kind of fluky for him. They're still pretty high on him, and, you know, you look at the past, they've had Ray Emery in 2013. They had Antti Raanta the year after that. They had Scott Darling the last couple of years. The Hawks have been spoiled at the backup goalie position. This is more normal, where they're working a guy in who's still kind of feeling his way. I don't think that's a priority. I think they have enough needs that backup goalie is not what they're targeting right now.
Mark, Hawks have a span coming up where they'll play seven of their next eight on the road. Where they are positionally in the standings, how big is this road trip setting up, you know, a really critical second half of the season for if they want to get into the postseason?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, we made a big deal out of the three-game homestand mm-hmm. that they just had, because they haven't had a three-game. They've been on the road, it seems like, forever. And they haven't been dominating at home the way they used to. So, you know, they got their 6 points in three games that they needed to in this homestand. But now you move forward, and it's like, all right, well, look at this road trip you got here. And you're playing much better teams now in tough buildings. They need to keep their heads above water. I mean, you'd love to say, hey, you need to go rip off a run and win five or six of these games, but that might not be realistic right now. What has to happen is they have to avoid disaster. They can't lose three or four games in a row here, because they'll be, you know, drowning in the standings, and all of a sudden they'll be 5 points out of a playoff spot with four teams in the middle. This is very unfamiliar territory for the Hawks. It's been a long time since they've had to fight and scratch and claw for a playoff spot. So their mettle is going to be tested here, especially this next month or so.
Mark, a happy Hanukkah to you, and a happy holidays, of course. If, for your Chicago Blackhawks fan on your shopping list, if they were interested in maybe a book about the Chicago Blackhawks, maybe it's called If These Walls Could Talk.
There's 7 nights left.
Yeah, 7 nights left of Hanukkah. The Christmas is 12 shopping days until Christmas. Where could that book be acquired? And maybe the author of that book, if we happen to be speaking with him, could tell us a little bit about that book.
I appreciate that. You can get it anywhere fine books are sold, and also mediocre books. it's basically a chronicling of the last 10 years, kind of a fly on the wall inside the locker room look at the last 10 years, how the Blackhawks went from their dark ages to their golden age, and, you know, some fun stories along the way, especially about that 2010 team, which was kind of the last of a dying breed, a bunch of crazy, rich, young guys who like to drink heavily on the road and stuff, right before social media took the fun out of everything. So it's a lot of fun. So the behind-the-scenes stories, on-the-ice stories, in the locker room stories, on-the-plane stories. I think it makes an outstanding night five or six of Hanukkah gift or a good stocking stuffer. Absolutely.
The book is called If These Walls Could Talk, Chicago Blackhawks Stories from the Ice, Locker Room, and Press Box, written by our guest on the program, Mark Lazarus. Mark, appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us this evening. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Thank you.
Take care, Mark. When we come back, we're going to discuss, we're going to flip things around. Yeah, we're going to discuss the struggles of Nolan Patrick thus far in his rookie year. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Toward the net, down to the flex, just wide. He's got it back out from Patrick. He scores! Goal number one for Nolan Patrick. And the Flyers are within one at 3-2. Great play by Dale Weiss. Created the whole thing, staying with it, and Patrick the payoff.
That was the first career goal for Nolan Patrick. It came back in October. And unfortunately for the second overall pick in last year's draft, that he played, you know, second overall pick behind Nico Hischier of the New Jersey Devils, there haven't been very many goals aside from that one. Nolan Patrick struggling a little bit in his rookie year with the Philadelphia Flyers, so much so that Ron Hextall, general manager of the Flyers, came out this week and sort of, you know, maybe calmed down some of the chatter around Nolan Patrick. He has 2 goals and 6 points thus far through 20 games for the Flyers. Hextall came out, told NBC Sports Philadelphia, quote, "Patrick's 19 years old. He's a kid. I know people want more out of him. We want more out of him, but he's a 19-year-old. People think because a kid's got a big name, he's drafted high, he's going to come into the league and bang, he's going to make an instant impact. He's shown enough signs that he can compete at this level and be a factor, and that's what you want with a young kid. I don't like putting young kids on a team that aren't a factor. Why would he even be on your team? Nolan has shown at times he can be a factor, and he needs to get better as the year goes on." Is the attention, Ezzy and Sean, is the attention being placed on Nolan Patrick and maybe the spotlight that's being placed on his struggles, if you want to call him that, during his rookie season, are they unfair at this point in time?
Yes, and I think this doesn't get talked about enough, Drew. This is a player who only played, I believe, 30 games last year for the Brandon Wheat Kings. 30 or 40 games. I don't have it in front of me.
Hernia surgery, injuries galore.
No, it wasn't even one hernia surgery. It was a misdiagnosed
sports abdominal tear.
Yes, and if you know anything about sports hernias,
yes.
I mean, it's no fun at all. I've had a herniated disc, Drew. You know how much problems I've had with that.
Yes, I'm going to have to wheel you into the studio on a daily basis.
Right, and I obviously I'm not a high-performance athlete, but
not at
Nolan
all.
Patrick has missed a lot of hockey guys, not to mention the fact that he had a concussion back in late October. He made his return, if you remember, here in Winnipeg. I know you guys remember, but for those out there listening who don't remember, Nolan Patrick made his return after missing almost a month with post-concussion syndrome. So you're talking about a guy that's had a whole bevy of different injuries over the last year, year and a half, and it's tough. When you go back to the summer, Sean, and you talk about his training, he really wasn't able to train until I believe it was around early to mid-August because he was recovering from all of these surgeries he's had. So, I mean, really, if you think about it, he hasn't really started off with the same type of schedule and the same type of training that a guy like Nico Hischier has started off with. And you have to also remember, Drew, he just turned 19 years old. When you're talking about guys like Brock Besser, Brock Besser's going to turn 21 next year. When you're talking about Matthew Barzal played another 2 years for the Seattle Thunderbirds in the Western Hockey League. Nolan Patrick was just drafted. There aren't a lot of players that play in the same year that they're drafted. This kid is really young. He's really talented. And I wouldn't be that worried about the fact that he's struggling offensively. He's going to be a heck of a player, and I think he's going to be a cornerstone piece for the Flyers for many years to come.
Yeah, I completely agree, Ezzy. I mean, you talk about some setbacks, and for an 18, 19-year-old kid, freshly drafted, coming into the NHL, in a market like Philadelphia, where the fans can be, let's just say,
less than forgiving?
There we go. Sure,
there you
let's go.
Go
with that.
That's diplomatic.
Yeah, there we go. 2017. Yeah.
They're still booing Santa Claus.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But you talk about that, and then, Ezzy, you talked about how we go back into the summer, and he recovers from surgery, you know, he misdiagnoses, abdominal tear, and then a freak, like, facial infection mid-July that sets him back even more. So he finishes all the physical abdominal core rehab, and then all of a sudden another setback, and you just got to think, he's probably thinking to himself, when can I start training? Like, when can I get on the ice and you know, get some physical contact? And I like, when you can't get your bearings right out of the gate, especially as a young player getting confidence early, it compounds. And when you're playing center and you're learning on the fly, it is tough, especially when you make glaring mistakes. And I was just reading an article that a lot of the knock on him right now is that he's out of position and he turns the puck over too much. So, you know, these are just mistakes that come with experience and age and strength. And for a guy, it's completely unfair for him to be held at such a high pedestal this early in his career.
And Patrick Laine, Nikolai Ehlers, Mark Scheifele, these players here in Winnipeg have gone through the same types of problems, right? They're adjusting to the NHL game, the speed of the game. And, you know, it doesn't help, by the way, that the Flyers had a 10-game losing streak.
Yeah.
And they've been a bit of a mess this year. I realize they've won some games. I think they've won four or five in a row.
Yeah,
if I'm not mistaken, right? So, I mean, the Flyers are starting to play better, but, you know, in November there, early to mid-November, you know, it wasn't looking too good for the Flyers. And, you know, right now, Nolan Patrick's obviously struggling to score. He hasn't scored a goal in 10 games, but players go through this. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if he snaps out of this and he finishes with a pretty good season. I wouldn't, you know, expect him to get into the Calder Trophy discussion, Drew, or anything like that. But, you know, it's hard when your first year in the NHL, you get knocked out with a concussion after a season in which you missed the majority of the season with these hernia surgeries. So, you know, it's been a case of bad luck for him. And, you know, I wouldn't write him off just yet. If you're writing a guy off at 19 years old, you're foolish.
This segment of NHL This Week is brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Over the past 20 years, Keener Jerseys has established itself as one of the best jersey customizers in the world. Specializing in customization services and branded team apparel, Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. Is Nolan Patrick one of those players who, if he was eligible to go to the AHL, and we know he's not because he's not 20 years old, is he one of those players that would benefit from a change in that rule? Maybe have that sort of exceptional player rule for guys who are too good for junior but not yet eligible by the letter of the law for the AHL?
Sure, but he's just too talented not to be in the NHL.
So you don't even think he'd benefit from the AHL at this point?
He could benefit, but as you mentioned, it's kind of a moot point just because he can't play in the American Hockey League. But, you know, if you're asking me, would he benefit from a similar situation to Kyle Connor, who played the majority of last season in the American Hockey League, gained confidence, played top 6 minutes, played top line minutes, actually.
He was eligible to do
and regained his confidence. Absolutely, Drew.
And Connor, of course, being eligible to do so because he went through the U.S. college ranks.
Right, and I realize, you know, some have criticized Ron Hextall for not releasing Nolan Patrick to Team Canada for the World Juniors, but I think they want Nolan Patrick to go through this and get better in the NHL. I mean, I personally believe, I thought he should have gone number one to the Devils, by the way. I realize most scouts by the end of it were saying that Nico Hischier was a better player, but I still think that Nolan Patrick, by the time this is all over, is going to be a better overall player. But right now, you know, he's going through some confidence issues. He's struggling a little bit, but, you know, the season is still early. I mean, he can get through this, and as we talked about, I mean, those first few games after suffering a concussion are going to be tough, so, you know, he's got to go through this.
Coming up next, we're going to be joined by Jeff O'Neill. He's, of course, our colleague with TSN 1050 in Toronto. He's got a new clothing line. It all goes to help sick kids at the Sick Kids Hospital in Toronto, gritgrinder.ca. Jeff O'Neill joins us next to talk about that. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Hour number two of NHL This Week starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor with you in the studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com. We're working hard to get Jeff O'Neill on the line. He's going to join us to, you know, look a little bit at the Leafs, look a little bit at the Sens, talk a little bit Jets with him. Always, you know, interesting to get the perspective from what's going on in the big smoke in Toronto. So Jeff's going to join us. And of course, the plug, gritgrinder.ca, is great new sort of charitable endeavor clothing line that's helping out the Sick Kids Hospital there in Toronto. So great cause going on there for that. So that's something to look forward to.
Yeah, I went on the website earlier today and they're actually sold out. I wanted to pick up some Grit Grinder gear and support O-Dog, and they're all sold out, which is a good thing. I can't get anything, you know, to give as a gift, but, you know, good because it's going for a good cause.
Exactly. So it's always good to see that something like that is being well received. We'll get Jeff on the line coming up here momentarily. As it were, and Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch is going to join us at the bottom of the hour as well. Talk about the Blue Jackets. They were embarrassed last night by the Edmonton Oilers. And talk about John Tortorella's press conference, which lasted all of 16 seconds. It's sort of nice to see the old Torts come back on the scene briefly, coming on to the microphone saying he has no explanation and no answers for the game that the Blue Jackets played, so he's not even going to take questions on that front. It was definitely an interesting John Tortorella press conference yesterday. The only thing it was missing was Larry Brooks and him getting into it.
Yeah, and the Blue Jackets got absolutely embarrassed 7-2. It happened earlier this season to the Jets. The Blue Jackets came in here and defeated the Jets 5-2, so Torts didn't really have much time for the media last night.
No, he did not.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend from TSN 1050 in Toronto. You can catch him on Overdrive Monday through Friday. Jeff O'Neill joins us. Jeff, how are you this evening?
How you guys doing? Do you miss Gary Lawless or what?
You know, there's a Lawless,
absolutely
there's
not.
A Lawless size hole in my heart, and no matter he can't fill it all the way in Vegas. It's a real problem.
He's a big shot now in Vegas, so the hell with him.
Yeah, he won't even respond to our texts anymore. He came to town with his own security detail when the Golden Knights
Jesus.
Were here.
That's
I know,
a stretch.
Right
That's
to his
a
head.
We miss Shane though.
Yeah, Shane's still a good guy.
Yeah, the sheriff, he's a pretty solid dude.
So. Yeah, I know. Law should take some lessons. Jeff, obviously, brought you on. We'll talk a little bit the Leafs, talk a little bit about the Jets. But the most important thing is gritgrinder.ca. So for those in our audience who, might not know what gritgrinder.ca is all about, can you sort of give a quick synopsis of how it came to be and then, why you're raising money for such a great cause?
Well, it's just something that me and one of my best friends growing up, we decided to do on our show. We have a little term for a grit grinder. It's just somebody who's looks like basically me, stocky, hardworking. It's just a term we came up with on the radio show. So me and him decided to, we have a pretty good following on our show in here in Toronto. So we just decided to make some grit grinder hoodies and hats and have the proceeds go to sick kids. It's something that's very close to both of us. Being from this area, and I'm sure even you guys know somebody that's connected to sick kids in some way, shape, or form. So it was my first kind of time doing anything kind of business-related or setting something up where you got to do that kind of stuff, and he's been a great help, and it's kind of been a good success. And we look forward to keeping it going and opening up more stuff in the spring and just, see how it turns out. It's been a lot of fun to do.
Jeff, I was on gritgrinder.ca earlier today, and it's all sold out. Is the plan to have more merchandise coming in before Christmas?
Absolutely. I think it's one of those things we didn't want to... I'm not the most business-savvy guy, but the one thing I know is you don't want to go too crazy off the hop if things aren't working out, so we just wanted to get a feel for how it was going, and I think we've got a pretty good feel, and we'll do some more stuff in the spring, and it should be good. Some golf shirts, some different hats, and stuff like that. So the early part was a success, and we'll see how it goes.
Jeff, we want to talk about the Leafs with you. Of course, you cover the Leafs on TSN 1050 in addition to being a former member of the Leafs yourself. I wanted to start off with asking you about Paul Maurice, who was your head coach for many years when you were a member of the Carolina Hurricanes, including that 2002 Stanley Cup run. When you're watching this Jets team and you see where they've come from when Paul Maurice took over from Claude Noel, what stands out to you from a perspective of, him being your former coach and what he's been able to do with this current group?
Well, the one thing is I'm happy for Paul because sometimes you're as good a coach as your goaltender is and the talent you have in front of you. I think all the years in Carolina, people were looking at Paul's body of work and they're like, didn't make the playoffs, well, look at the rosters we had. We weren't very good, and that's just the bottom line. And you could grind teams into the ground, and we did make the playoffs a couple times, but I'm happy that he's got an opportunity to be with a real talented group now. And it's pretty simple with Paul. It's a pretty simple game plan. Follow the structure, play hard defensively, get back to get pucks, and if you work hard, you generally don't have a problem with him. So it's nice to see that all come together for him, where you put talented players in a system like that. And let's be honest, the goaltending is a major factor for him. It's like, I think Mike Babcock said it, show me a good goaltender. I think it's John Cooper who might have said it. Show me a great goaltender, and I'll show you a great coach, because I think we can all agree the NFL is a quarterback league. In the NHL, you got to have star power, but if you don't have a goaltender, you are basically screwed, and that goes for every team. You look around the league, the goaltenders that aren't performing, the teams aren't very good.
Jeff, a lot was made here in Winnipeg when we brought a guy in by the name of Matt Hendricks in the offseason from Edmonton.
Yeah.
And
sneaky good move.
We think so, too, over here. And there was a play against Las Vegas a few weeks ago where he takes a skate to the face. He goes off, gets glued up, comes back out, blocks a shot on the penalty kill. Next shift, comes out and scores the game-tying goal. When you see a guy, you know, pretty much a grit grinder right there, you know, I'm curious, what does that do to a bench when you talk about such a skilled team like the Jets, when you see a guy like that go out, literally get lacerated in the face, block a shot, then go score a goal?
You're forgetting one thing. Last year, I think some guy almost blew his nuts off with a shot, slap shot. His jaw got ripped apart. And in Edmonton, I think it was. Somebody took a slapper, and it just shredded his jaw apart. So he's a tough customer. But I think what it does when you got a young group of talented players like that, and the coach here in Toronto always refers to it as like, you got a guy playing for his livelihood, and it's just, you see the competitiveness and the fight in him every day to stay in the National Hockey League. And sometimes a Laine or a maybe even a Scheifele, but he's a pretty focused guy. Sometimes you can kind of get caught up in yourself and your stats and daydreaming about how good you are. I mean, you see a guy like that, and I can't tell because I'm not up close to the team, but he seems like a real popular guy in the locker room, and he's one of those glue guys that will go out there and get the job done no matter at what cost. So it's like, the best thing for that is the young guys in the locker room can see that and kind of, not that they're going to add that same level of competitiveness, but it's a wake-up call. If he's going to do it, everybody should.
Jeff O'Neill's our guest on NHL This Week. You know Jeff from, of course, his work with TSN 1050 and TSN Hockey. Jeff, a couple weeks ago, Jordan Eberle was talking about the effect that the media had on him and sort of grinding him down in Edmonton and maybe grinding down his confidence. You know, you played in Toronto for a number of years. As a player, how easy or how difficult is it to sort of tune out the outside chatter and really sort of, you know, turn off that aspect of the humanity that we all have?
I don't know. I always kind of dumb things down, and I just wanted to, I think what Jordan was kind of expressing was it was a difficult situation because he was part of a core group that just year after year after year, they were horrible. And, you know, they would take their turns, have seasons and possibly 30 goals, but as a group, they never made the playoffs. And I kind of think that's what he's referring to. And when you're a part of that, you're going to be under scrutiny because you're associated with the core group that can't get it done. And that can be a difficult thing. And I think the timing for him leaving Edmonton was perfect because he, you know, playing in Long Island, Jordan Eberle is not the main focus of anybody. I think it starts with John Tavares and different sports teams and the Jets and the Knicks and who else knows, you know, whatever else is going on in New York. So I don't think he has to worry about that, but when you're in a negative situation, and Darcy Tucker talks about it a lot being here in Toronto, it's when it's good, it's real good. But when you're a part of a disaster, it's not a whole lot of fun. So that should be the motivating factor, is to try to play hard and compete and be on a winning team, because when it's not good, it's not good.
Jeff, I'm sure you guys were just talking about it on your show, Overdrive, on TSN 1050 in Toronto. Auston Matthews has missed the last couple of games, and there are rumblings that it might be concussion. How concerned are the Leafs about this right now?
I think they're probably, I mean, me as an outsider and someone that watches the team every night, I'm just concerned that if it is that type of thing or any kind of nagging injury, he's just so young. It's his second year in the league, and you know how these things can kind of, you know, escalate, and it's like, you know, you look at a guy like Marc-Andre Fleury who had a concussion early on, and he was off for like 2 months, I think, because that's the tail end of it when it's like the third or fourth or whatever it is. So, you know, you know, even a guy like Aaron Ekblad, who's a young guy, and it seems like if he has one more, people are going to say, oh, okay, well, when's the next one? Is the next one going to end his career? So it's just one of those things where it's like you're cautious about him and his personal career, but the Leafs themselves, they've been finding ways to win games without them. And Mike Babcock, I'm sure he's disappointed that he's not in the lineup, but whatever lineup he gets, hand it to him before game time, that's what he goes with, and they try to win games, and they've been doing that. So the team obviously wants him back. He's a game breaker. He's a dynamic player. he's their offensive engine. Every time he's on the ice, he dominates zone time and quality shots on net. So he's a guy they'd love to see back in the lineup, but I don't think it's going to be in the next two games.
Jeff, Blake Wheeler had an interesting quote a few weeks ago. He said that having Mark Scheifele as his centerman and line mate pushes him to be better because he sees the work that Scheifele puts in, you know, the additional skills training with Adam Oates and, you know, the dietary restrictions and just all the work he puts in. And he says it's a real eye-opener, and it pushes him to get better every day at the rink. Is that a rarity where, a younger player pushes an older player with all the development, or is this kind of common practice and you just don't hear it that much around the NHL?
Nah, I think it's starting to be something different. I mean, for guys like me, when I played, there was no skills coaches. It was just, July 5th or 10th, you start training, and August 1st, you start skating, and you kind of skate with the guys and you get back. But I think for a guy like Blake Wheeler, a couple things, he really enjoys and relishes the opportunity of playing on a line with Mark Scheifele. So if that's what you got to do to keep up with Mark Scheifele, you know, that's what you got to do. And the other thing is he understands that, you know, these modern day players, they might do some things you don't agree with, but there's other things you have to look at and say, man, that's, if you see the results and what they're doing, the different ways. And Mark Scheifele describes himself as a self-proclaimed hockey nerd. And you have to look at guys that succeed and what they do. That's what I always say to younger players, whether, you know, it's whatever level it's at, whether it's peewee or midget, like, look at the best player's habits. So if the best player, a guy like Sidney Crosby or Connor McDavid or Mark Scheifele, if they conduct themselves a certain way, whether it be on the ice or off the ice, then why isn't the other guys doing? Why aren't the other guys doing it? It just doesn't make sense to me, because that's what they do. Obviously, there's more talent in those players, but if that's what they do to train, to prepare, to get ready for games, that's what they eat, then why don't you do it? Give yourself the best chance. So I applaud Blake Wheeler for doing that.
Jeff, we'll let you go on this last question, and we really appreciate your time this evening. How does the Erik Karlsson, what is now, I guess, quickly becoming a saga, how does that play out in Ottawa over the next, you know, 6 months, year, 18 months?
I honestly, if I was a general manager in this situation, I would just, it's hard to tell, though. We're talking about another year away, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, how can you judge what the dollar value of that contract is going to mean at that particular time? But you got to get a gauge for what this guy's looking for. And if it's something, I don't think they have enough depth on defense. If you remember a couple of years ago, Nashville Predators, they just, the term own rental's been thrown around these days. And they just let Ryan Suter play out the year. They let him walk. They wanted to take a shot with him in the lineup. But I don't think Ottawa can really afford to do that. So when it comes time, you just sit down with Erik Karlsson and say, hey, do you want to be here? Do you want to make this work? What is the number? And it's got to go up the chain for the Ottawa Senators. And if the owners puts the kibosh to it, then what the hell are you going to do? You got to move them and try to bring in the assets, which would be a devastating situation for the Senators because Karlsson is so important to that organization. You almost can't even think about moving forward without him. So that's a tire fire they got going there right now. And it's unexpected and it's shocking. And it's a key point for their general manager right now to see how he's going to handle the situation, because it's not an easy thing to go through. I'm a big fan of Pierre Dorion. I think he's a great guy, but he's got a situation on his hands right now where how he handles this and gets out of it is going to be imperative for the Sens and himself.
The website with the clothing line is gritgrinder.ca, and you can, of course, hear Jeff O'Neill and see him each and every weekday, Monday through Friday, on TSN 1050 Overdrive. Jeff, appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us this evening.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Take care, Jeff.
Thanks a lot, O-Dog.
When we come back, we're going to talk about the Erik Karlsson situation. It is quickly becoming a matter of concern for those who are fans of the Ottawa Senators. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the O'Legal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Twelve 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290, the segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Is the famous Frank Zappia cooking tonight?
I don't know. I haven't seen a tweet from Frank, but if he is, I'm sure he'll send us a picture of whatever he's got fired up. Maybe he's got some a roast, or he's also makes some delicious homemade pizzas.
Well, you brought some cookies in the studio tonight.
Anybody else want another? You guys want another cookie?
I never say no to a cookie.
Okay, here you go. Here's another cookie. Some candy cane cookies, courtesy of my better half, of course. Laura made some delicious cookies. We had our housewarming party over the weekend, and you know, whipped some goodies up, and they were quite delicious. And the leftovers need to leave my house, otherwise I, for dinner, have an entire bag of cookies, and that's not good for anybody.
That's the way my family is. Like, my mom will make a cheesecake, serve three slices, and be like, oh, here, Sean, just, like, take this cheesecake. I don't need three quarters of a cheesecake.
Oh, I love cheesecake.
I eat the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's never a healthy thing, though, for you.
Cheesecake for life.
Believe it or not, guys, do you know that the Ottawa Senators are playing an outdoor game this weekend?
Sorry, the who?
The Ottawa Senators are playing an outdoor game this weekend that has been completely overshadowed by the Erik Karlsson situation.
And the fact that the Senators suck this year.
Well, the Senators suck as well. That's certainly not helping matters as well. But Erik Karlsson is, you know, a couple weeks ago came out and said, I'm going to get my fair market value, which isn't a surprise. I mean, I don't know why anybody was surprised. They, you know, would expect him to take a hometown discount. I mean, there'd be no reason to. He's already playing on a very reasonable contract.
He's the best defenseman in the league.
He should get paid like the best defenseman in the league. So I don't know why that was a surprise to anyone. But since then, and that coupled with the fact that the Senators have been absolutely horrendous this year, all hell has broken loose in the nation's capital, and it's threatening to, well, it's certainly overshadowed the outdoor game that the Senators are playing this weekend.
The Sens are 1-8-1 in their last 10. Like, this is a team that almost went to the Stanley Cup final last year.
An overtime goal away from doing it, then they've certainly hit rock bottom this week. They lost to the Buffalo Sabres. They lost to the Arizona Coyotes as part of this losing streak. They lost two separate 5-0 games, one to the Sharks and one, of course, to the Jets here on that couple Sundays ago.
Yeah, they're playing the Rangers tonight, and the Rangers are playing some good hockey.
Yeah,
so.
Tied at one
apiece. So we'll update you that on that game later on this hour. Here's what Bob McKenzie, TSN Hockey Insider, had to say about the Senators and their dilemma, quote-unquote, regarding Erik Karlsson and his future in the nation's capital.
Yeah, there's no question about it. The sort of the alarm bells are ringing, and everybody's hair is on fire in Ottawa more than anywhere else right now, and understandably so. A season with so much promise, a season with such high expectations, is right now on the verge of kind of falling apart with this stretch that they've gone through. They need to pull out of this tailspin now and get it going, but now they've got their work cut out for them, and in the meantime, it's distraction central. They ask lots of players for their trade lists for teams they can or can't be traded to. It's something that happens a lot in the National Hockey League, and with a team doing poorly, it's bound to happen when a general manager wants to know what his various options are as he talks trade with other teams. But it's obviously by no means a formality because it's Erik Karlsson. And in the past, I think it's probably safe to assume that when Pierre Dorion did this exercise in prior years, you know, it was, I want yours, your list. Oh, Erik, no, we don't need your list. And on we go. The fact that they asked for it this time, you can read in a lot of different things. Some people choose to say that maybe the Sens were a little piqued at Karlsson's comments about not taking a hometown discount when the Drew Doughty story broke about how he's looking for market value, and Karlsson reiterated that. Perhaps it's that. Perhaps it's simply a case of recognizing that as we get closer and closer to the potential expiry of Erik Karlsson's contract, or when that window opens on July 1 when an extension can be done, that the Senators do have to consider all their options, just as Karlsson has to consider all his options.
What do you think Pierre Dorion, general manager of the Ottawa Senators, is going to do? Is this going to I mean, the Senators are an active team. They're one of the rare active teams. Dorion's not afraid about making moves, you know, and his predecessor, of course, Brian Murray, not afraid about making moves, be it acquiring, you know, Bobby Ryan when they did, or the Jason Spezza trade demand, or you know, the Matt Duchene trade earlier this year. How does this situation with Erik Karlsson resolve itself, and do you expect Erik Karlsson to be wearing a different team's jersey in the next 6 months, 12 months, 18 months as he approaches free agency?
Yeah, unfortunately, Drew, I don't have the answer to that, but I don't think he's going anywhere this year.
You don't think
there's no rush? I mean, there is absolutely no rush. He has another year left on his contract after this year at $6.5 million, guys. Maybe the best bargain in the entire NHL. I think Mark Scheifele and Nikolaj Ehlers would have something to say about that as well. But, I mean, when you're talking about Erik Karlsson, I mean, you're talking about a select group of elite defensemen, right? There are only a few defensemen that are in that Erik Karlsson range. You know, we talked about last year's playoffs. Some things that Erik Karlsson does on the ice are just otherworldly, right? Like, he does stuff that you just can't even imagine of doing yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you talk about, you know, what he might get in his next contract, I think it has to start with $10 million a year. He might make $11 million, $12 million a year, Drew, but I mean, if you're talking about possibly trading Erik Karlsson because you don't think you're going to be able to sign him, I mean, I think you're talking about a massive rebuild. I mean, how good is this team without Erik Karlsson if they're second last in the Eastern Conference with Erik Karlsson, right? So, you know, just to, you know, get back to answering your question, Drew, I mean,
he'll be 27 at on May 31st. So
he has lots of good years left.
So the season's over for the Senators. Not going to make the playoffs this year.
He has at least 7 or 8 good years left.
Right, and that's all they can sign him for. So if you're Eugene Melnyk, or if you're the Senators organization, and you don't just say to Karlsson, okay, here's your 8-year, you know, $88 million contract, $11 million a season, whatever else. Why do you own an NHL franchise if you're Eugene Melnyk and you can't get this done?
Yeah, and, you know, guys, July 1st is the earliest that he can sign, I believe.
Yeah, that's correct, because he would be in his next, so his contract expires at the end of next season.
Right, and, you know, we could see the Ottawa Senators sign Erik Karlsson to either a 7 or 8 year deal for $10, $11 million a year, so that's still a possibility, but, you know, this whole idea of, you know, which teams, you know, Erik Karlsson couldn't be traded to, you know, and him submitting that list, I mean, you know, that's going to obviously, you know, provoke some discussion, but you look at some of the contracts that the Ottawa Senators have on the books right now, and the Ottawa Senators, by the way, guys, are only $3 million away from the salary cap. Bobby Ryan is making $7.2 million for five more years. Dion Phaneuf is making $7 million for 3 more years.
To spend money. So
you also have to sign Mark Stone, Drew. Just let me finish here for a second. Okay. You still have to sign Mark Stone. He's making $3.5 million a year. He's a pending RFA. He might get $6, $7 million a year the way he's playing. So, I mean, Pierre Dorion is probably going to have to move some of these contracts around, but as far as I'm concerned, I don't think you can start talking about trading Erik Karlsson right now, because if you're trading Erik Karlsson, Sean, I mean, this franchise is going to basically start the rebuilding process next year.
I mean, Sean, everything about the NHL nowadays is designed, especially with the salary cap, is designed to allow teams to hold on to their best players. This wouldn't be a difficult contract negotiation. So why do the Senators, I mean, why are they pouring this gasoline on the fire? Kyle Turris comes out earlier today and says that he thinks that it was, you know, that the general manager wanted to re-sign him, but the owner wouldn't let the general manager spend the money. I mean, all due respect, I think Eugene Melnyk is the biggest problem as the owner of the Senators. I think he's the biggest problem with the Senators in that he's too hands-on and he's cumbersome and he doesn't let Pierre Dorion do his job.
Which is tough, because whenever Pierre Dorion wants to make a decision and maybe has the ability to, he has to run that by the big dogs and then, you know, wait for the approval. And it's just, it adds another voice in your ear that, you know, creates conflict and creates, you know, just a toxic almost environment. And you have to assume that getting rid of Erik Karlsson is the last possible option, unless you are getting a mega load in return. Just the utmost of amazing returns.
And I think, again, goes back to what I was saying before, Sean, I just think it's too early to really know whether or not he's going to be moved. And I would be shocked if he's moved before the trade deadline. I'd be shocked if he's moved before next summer, because I just don't think there's any reason why you would trade him right now. Why would you trade Karlsson this year?
I mean, if you're in a rebuild, the problem is they don't have their first round pick. I mean, yeah, it's lottery protected, granted. So as long as they're in the bottom 10,
they don't have their second round pick either.
They don't have their second round pick because that went to New York in the Brassard trade. So this Senators team can't really rebuild because they don't have draft picks.
Well, they can trade players to acquire draft picks back.
So, I mean,
I think that's what you're going to see. I mean, if this keeps up, Drew, if they remain at the basement of the Eastern Conference, they're going to be a seller come February.
Definitely, but you know, it's a really sticky situation in Ottawa, and it's certainly overshadowing this outdoor game that's happening for some reason. And I don't know how this plays out, but it's going to be it's probably the most interesting situation to watch in the NHL right now. From one goal away from representing the Eastern Conference in the Stanley Cup Finals to an absolute tire fire that's taking place this week in Ottawa.
I think Carlson still signs long term with Ottawa.
Well, there you go. As he's on the record, you can quote it December 13th, 2017. I'm sure that Carlson will be traded at 8:30 p.m. When we come back, Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch joins us. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
I know you have a job to do. I'm not answering any questions tonight. There's no sense of me even trying to answer questions about this evening, okay? So, sorry about that. Have a good night.
At least he said have a good night. I think that's, you know, there's some politeness there from John Tortorella. That was his entirety of his post-game scrum.
He wasn't that polite to me.
No, he certainly wasn't. The last night, that was the entirety of his post-game scrum as the Oilers defeated the Blue Jackets by a 7-2 margin. Aaron Portsline joins us now to discuss it.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From theathletic.com in Columbus, he covers the Blue Jackets. Aaron, I hope you weren't expecting to get a ton out of Torts. Had any sort of deep philosophical conversation you wanted with him last night?
God, I had great questions lined up.
It was an ugly night for the Blue Jackets last night. Just one of those games? I mean, is Torts, you know, Torts, has there been problems with the Blue Jackets? I mean, they're still atop the Metropolitan Division, so he seems sort of maybe unusually grumpy for a team that's still winning.
I have to tell you, this is among the strangest seasons that I've covered here. It's not. They've had certainly, obviously, worse seasons, more disappointing seasons. This is an odd one because they're in first place in a division that a lot of people think is among the better divisions in the league, and nobody is happy. No one thinks they've played well yet. Now, Bobrovsky's been very good. Josh Anderson's been a pleasant surprise. Panarin's starting to look like he's fitting in. But you've got all these guys that have helped lift the organization to this point. Foligno, Atkinson, Dubinsky, Boone Jenner, Alexander Wenberg. Totally non-existent. And they have won despite those guys, not because of those guys. They just haven't gotten going at all this year. And so, you know, they've won games where you're not quite sure how they won that game or if they deserve to win that game. They've played well in stretches, for sure. But when they lose a game like this, or like they lost to Jersey early last week where it was like, you know, come to Jesus practice the next day, it feels like a comeuppance almost, and I think they're worried about it sliding back the other direction.
Now, Aaron, you just mentioned Brandon Dubinsky, and you reported earlier today for The Athletic that he's going to be out up to 2 months after suffering a facial fracture in a fight with Zach Cassian of the Edmonton Oilers. Where are the Blue Jackets going to miss Brandon Dubinsky the most? Because as you mentioned, you know, he's struggling to put the puck in the net this year, but is it really going to hurt them most in that kind of scoring depth area?
You know where I think it hurts them most in an area that's not very sexy but very important for this team? Defensive zone faceoffs, because at last check, he had taken more defensive zone faceoffs than any center in the NHL. And because the rest of the team really struggles at defensive zone faceoffs, the rest of the team, I'm not sure Tortorella has a ton of faith in Wenberg right now on either end of the ice. Dubois is a young guy who has not been playing center that much, so he hasn't had much success in the faceoff circle. I mean, if you take Dubinsky out of the mix, I think he's like a 54% The rest of the team's like at 43%. It's now the worst team in the league in faceoff percentage. That's a big thing for him. You wonder, do they have to move Nick Foligno back to the middle? I don't think that's what they do tomorrow night. It looks like Lucas Sedlak, the fourth line guy, is moving up to the third line, and Jordan Schrader, a player you would be familiar with from, he's played some expensive time in Minnesota and Vancouver, he moves into the fourth line. None of this is set, obviously. It's going to be a struggle for them. If you thought they needed a centerman before, they may really need one now just to get through this stretch.
You know, Aaron, going back to the 2016 NHL draft, of course, Columbus takes Dubois over Puljujarvi, and then you fast forward to last night, and there they are, the two of them, playing against each other. You know, a lot was made of that draft. I'm curious, just from a storytelling perspective, what was it like to kind of watch them go head-to-head? I know the score kind of makes it hard to maybe evaluate each of them, but that must have been at least just a fun watch from you guys' perspective.
Yeah, for sure. And I wrote a sizable piece just about the process of the Blue Jackets leading up to Dubois and how, you know, it surprised everybody at that draft. You remember in Buffalo, I think Edmonton was pleasantly surprised that Puljujarvi fell to number four. Certainly not saying that one pick is better than the other. I think both teams right now are pretty happy. The one thing that struck me last night, there were a couple times looking down from above where my thought was, who is that? God, that guy is huge. Who? That's Puljujarvi. My God, he's a big dude. He's a big dude. Yeah, pretty good night for him last night. He did not look lost like I think he may have been last season. He looked like he knew what he was doing. And Dubois wasn't really that great, to be honest with you. That line had one incredible shift early in the game. Dubois with Panarin on the left and Josh Anderson on the right. They just had a couple shifts where they were noticeable. Nobody looked good for the Blue Jackets last night. So round one, absolutely, to Puljujärvi.
Yeah, it was a great piece you wrote, Aaron. You can, of course, get it at theathletic.com. You can find it there, you know, the piece about the Blue Jackets with, of course, a Finnish general manager in Jarmo Kekäläinen, and overlooking the hometown kid and going with Pierre-Luc Dubois in that first round a few years back. Aaron, the power play for the Blue Jackets is remarkably bad, operating at 9.19% so far this season. What do you attribute such power play struggles to? I mean, this is a team that, you know, certainly has some top flight talent. A guy like Artemi Panarin, just by default, you would think that it would be able to put the power play at least over the 10% mark.
Well, right, and I'll say this too: this is not a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
At this point last year, Jackets had the best power play in the league. It was awesome. Nobody knew what the second unit was because it never got that far. It was incredible. And since the middle of last January, January 23rd, I think is the day that we've kept going back to, they have fallen off the map. And they're under 10% all the way back into the middle of last season. It doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, you've got 35-goal Cam Atkinson. You've got 80-point Artemi Panarin. You've got Seth Jones, Zach Werenski. We're talking future Norris Trophy candidates on the back end. They have enough talent here where there's no doubt they should be at least in the top half of the league. It is a mystery. I don't know what's wrong with it. If I did, I'd be on staff. They've tried a couple things, but they really haven't gone revolutionary on it. You played that clip of Tortorella. If anything, he's shown amazing patience. I think he had one blow up on the bench with assistant coach Brad Larson, but they've just chucked along here. And it's sort of the personality of the whole team right now, where you just envision them banging their heads against the wall, thinking this has to change at some point. This can't simply continue where all of these proven NHL guys, we're talking former all-stars, can't be scoring engaged players in the NHL. It's a slump that's gone on well into 30 games now, and it's got to get going here. That they're standing in the Metro won't last long.
You know, Aaron, speaking of not making any sense, how does Cam Atkinson, who you just mentioned, go from a career-high 35 goals last year to being a healthy scratch and in Torts' doghouse?
Totally deserved, too. I mean, that's what I'm saying. And it's not just Atkinson. I mean, his game, you know, it you hear all the explanations. Well, the contract was really weighing on me. All right, kid, here's the 7-year extension. Well, now what is it? Maybe you relax a little bit when you have the contract. Okay, can it just play here? I mean, does it have to be something else? And I think he sort of reached that point in his comments the other day, but I didn't think he looked that different, frankly, last night than he did before the healthy scratch. And I think there may be more healthy scratches coming, not just necessarily for him, but for others. I mean, it's maybe harder to do now with Dubinsky out. You know, how many guys can you purposely have out of the lineup if you're already down that guy? And we talked a little bit to Tortorella about it today. How the frustration here is, if you're doing it just purely on merit, then you'd have two of these guys, maybe three guys out of the lineup on some night. If you're going to scratch Atkinson, and maybe it's deserved for others as well. But these are the guys that are the foundation of this team. And the other thing is, listen to me talk here. Everybody's struggling with this idea that they're in first place in the Metro. Like, maybe at some point people should smile a little bit here, but there's just a sense that they have not played up to the caliber of team that they think they can be. And I sense growing frustration for that.
Aaron, I'm curious. A lot was made of the Zach Werenski-Seth Jones pairing and how potent of a defensive pairing that could be and how important of a D pairing that could be for the Blue Jackets. How has their development been moving forward as they learn and grow together?
Yeah, I mean, I think Seth Jones is continuing to emerge as just a really, really special player. He was just awesome in the first period last night. Nothing to show for, but it had that feeling last night where Seth Jones wanted to be the noticeable player on the ice with Connor McDavid out there. Like, that was a challenge he went after. He was awesome in the first period. And I think he's getting better and better and better. Werenski is still such a sublime talent. I don't think he's regressed. I don't think it's a sophomore slump. But he's seeing different sort of attention being paid to him this year than he did last year. And you've seen some turnovers and some decisions under pressure that maybe weren't there last year. So he's been fine. The numbers, I think he's leading the NHL in goals scored for a defenseman, right? I mean, here we go again. There's a lot to like there. But I think both of those guys can be better. The question that I've been meaning to ask Tortorella the last couple days, but things have gotten a little weird around here, is at some point do you have to split those guys up? Because he has zero faith in Jack Johnson and David Savard. I shouldn't say zero faith. They've really taken a step back from last year, and not a lot of faith in the third pair right now, especially with Ryan Murray injured. So there's some uncertainty back there as well.
You know, Aaron, we wanted to ask you about a former teammate of Nick Batan's with the Portland Winterhawks and a fellow countryman of Nikolai Ehlers, Oliver Bjorkstrand. How would you assess his first full year in the NHL with the Columbus Blue Jackets?
Yeah, you know what? Quietly, he has been one of the guys, when you talk about all the players that aren't producing, the Foligno's, Atkinson's, Dubinsky's, Jenner's, all these guys, he's been one of the guys, along with Josh Anderson and Pierre-Luc Dubois, that have really picked up that slack. He's been really good. He has this great nickname from the junior ranks, the Maestro. It's a great nickname.
That is a good nickname.
He hasn't quite reached Maestro level at the NHL. He hasn't taken over a game and just sort of coordinated the game by his skill. He's not there yet, but he has been a very solid secondary type scoring guy. And I think they think he is going to be a wondrous offensive talent once he gets going, a 25-plus 30-goal guy. He's got a great shot. Still figuring out how best to use it, how to find that space for it. But, yeah, I think he's been one of the pleasant surprises here in the first 30 games.
Aaron, now you have me thinking about the Maestro episode of Seinfeld, so I think we should probably cut it off at that point in time before I start quoting Seinfeld lines to you.
Yeah. Right, great radio.
Aaron, thank you for this, buddy. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, anytime, guys. Thanks.
All righty, Aaron Portsline of the not the Columbus Dispatch, of theathletic.com in Columbus.
You're going to get in trouble, Drew.
I know that it's hard for me not to do it throughout the course of the interview because it's been so many years that it's been the Dispatch. Now, of course, it's theathletic.com in
Columbus.
Yeah,
we've been having Aaron on since the Red River Kick FM days.
Yeah, it's been a long
time. Back in 2009.
Time. Absolutely. I wonder if, you know, if anybody ever calls him Portsy, because if Torts gets mad at him, instead of Brooksy, it could be Portsy. You know.
Ezzy.
Yeah, exactly. It's got to end in an E. You're listening to NHL This Weeky or something.
Please don't do that.
Okay. We're live on TSN.
Go to break, Drew.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, one final segment of NHL This Week for this Wednesday evening. Big thank you to all our guests on tonight's program. Mark Lazarus of the Chicago Sun-Times, Jeff O'Neill of our sister station TSN 1050 in Toronto, and of course Aaron Portsline from theathletic.com. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download everywhere. Downloads and podcasts are available. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Of course, remember, if you're looking for a place to catch the game, Bernstein's Deli's got all the big screen TVs. They got food and drink specials. It's hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's. Check them out in the Cordon Village Mall and bernsteinsdeli.com for more information.
How many Illegal Curve sandwiches have you eaten today, Drew?
Today? None today. But, I mean, how many have I envisioned myself eating? Or how many have I wanted to eat? Half a dozen.
I had a dream about the icy sandwich recently.
That's troubling.
I love that honey mustard.
The honey mustard that's some good stuff.
That's a nice touch.
Yeah, Ezzy, you missed a good skate last night.
Well, I'm still on the IR.
I know you're still on the IR. Shawnee and I made some sweet, sweet magic playing together there in the Tuesday night pickup league.
No, people don't know this, but Drew's actually got some pretty decent hands. He can, you know, find that top corner when he needs to.
I can't skate, but I have decent eye-hand coordination.
You whack that rebound in.
I whack that rebound in good. I have a nose for the net, I think is what it's referred to. You know, a lack of talent, but a nose for the net.
So you're a grit grinder. I stole it, Shawnee.
Yeah, you beat him to it. Good. Take a quick look at the out-of-town scoreboard before we wrap it up on this Wednesday evening. We are pouring dirt on the Ottawa Senators. Well, in the face of adversity, they have a 2-1 lead over the New York Rangers, looking for an elusive win in the nation's capital. 2-1 for the Senators after 40 minutes. On Long Island, it's all Dallas. They're up 4-0 on the New York Islanders. Radulov, Ely, Pitlick, and Ben with the goals for the Dallas Stars. So they're laying waste to the Islanders tonight. 4-0 Dallas leading the New York Islanders. In Detroit, the Boston Bruins and the Detroit Red Wings, a 0-0 tie after 20 minutes. The Bruins amassing all of 2 shots on goal in what was undoubtedly a riveting period of hockey in front of those empty seats at the Little Caesars Arena. And then later tonight to come in Vancouver, the Nashville Predators are into Vancouver to face the Canucks. The Predators, of course, one of the best teams in the league. They're they're 1 point behind the Jets, looking to leapfrog the Jets with 2 games in hand. They should probably be able to do it, as they would be the favorites over the Vancouver Canucks later on tonight.
Yeah, guys, and you know, Nashville has quietly gone on this 7-1-2 run in their last 10 games, and they've got back-to-back games on the road against Vancouver and Edmonton. So obviously, you know, those two teams are struggling right now, so you expect maybe them to win both those two games. But Nashville, 1 point behind the Jets, Drew, but also two games in hand. So they'll make up one of those games tonight, but the Jets will still have a game in hand. And then obviously next Tuesday, you know, that big game in Nashville for the Jets. The Jets have already lost once in Nashville, and I told you off air, as far as I'm concerned, this Nashville team is still the best team in the West, in my opinion. And I realize that St. Louis right now is first in the Central, first in the West, but I still think top to bottom, Nashville is the elite team in the West. And especially when they get Ryan Ellis back, they start to get a little bit healthier. You know, this team, I think, you know, once you beat the Nashville Predators, I think you know that, you know, you have the ability to do that. But
the proverbial benchmark game.
Exactly. Yeah. But
it's going to be a fascinating 5 days for the Winnipeg Jets starting tomorrow night.
Yeah.
They have the Blackhawks at home. Then you have the home and home Saturday and Sunday. Saturday in St. Louis, Sunday back home against the Blues in that home and home series. And then they go to Nashville on that Tuesday, next Tuesday. It's really a fascinating stretch of games for the Winnipeg Jets. You make hay in these next four games, or you do well in these next four games, and you continue to reaffirm yourself as one of the upper echelon teams in the Western Conference, as one of the upper echelon teams in the Central Division. If you have a slide here, well, all of a sudden the Chicago Blackhawks get a little bit closer to you. The Blues maybe pull away from you a little bit more with those two games back-to-back. So this is a key stretch. These four games are a key stretch for the Winnipeg Jets. And really from now right through New Year's, it's not an easy stretch. You got
the
Islanders.
Well, it's not only, Drew, you know, sorry to cut you off, but it's not only, you know, the four games against the Central Division. It's four games in 6 days. Right, and it's against teams that you haven't played yet, or teams that have already defeated you. Right, Nashville beat the Jets, you know,
pretty handily
in Nashville. It was that second period, if you remember, when the Predators exploded for a couple power play goals. But they haven't played Chicago yet this year, and we talked to Mark Lazarus last hour. I mean, this is a team that has some injuries on the back end, and you know, they're having trouble with their depth scoring. And really, if you're able to shut down that top line with Jonathan Toews, Brandon Saad, and Alex DeBrincat, your chances are a lot better. So I think the Jets have a good chance here to win 3 of 4.
Well, they and you're playing a St. Louis Blues team on Saturday, Sunday, that you haven't yet played this year as well, and that's a banged up St. Louis Blues team. Alex Pietrangelo out of the lineup. We know that they're good without Jaden Schwartz now. Robbie Fabry's been out pretty much all season.
Pietrangelo isn't long term though; it's only about a week.
Yeah, he might actually. It was retroactive when they put him on IR, so he is eligible to come back Sunday against the Jets.
Yeah, not Saturday.
Not Saturday. Yeah. So definitely out of the lineup Saturday, but it'll be that'll be of course the topic of conversation on Saturday's Legal Curve Hockey Show, 9 a.m. here on TSN 1290. But it is an absolutely fascinating stretch for the Winnipeg Jets that starts tomorrow night at home against the Blackhawks. That's it for the Wednesday edition of NHL This Week. As we mentioned, a big thank you to our guests, Aaron Portsline, Jeff O'Neill, and Mark Lazarus. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local companies because they support the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com. For Sean Assor, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.